In 1325, a young scholar by the name of Ibn Battuta left his hometown of Tangiers, Morocco, to join a convoy headed to Mecca. He was to perform the Muslim pilgrimage of Hajj, and at the time, the journey was expected to last over a year. But Ibn Battuta would not return home for another 28 years. He made it to Mecca, but then continued a lifelong journey that would make him the most well-traveled man of his time. He visited almost every realm of the Muslim world, from Baghdad to Tanzania, from Spain to Mali, from Tunisia to Indonesia. In doing so, he traveled 120,000 kilometers, which is enough to circle the world three times.
Ibn Battuta is someone who went far beyond the horizons that were literally perceivable at the time and pushed the boundaries of knowledge.
This is Rizwan Ahmed, head of research at Barker Langham, a cultural heritage consultancy.
Both in a physical sense, who could traverse the furthest in terms of the landscape of the earth? No one had been as far as he had been before. And also in terms of that contribution, not only undertaking that passage, but writing it down and preserving that knowledge for generations to come.
Ibn Battuta's story reminds us of just how timeless mobility is. Exploring new horizons, building connections, improving society, these desires lie at the very core of human progress. In the second episode of our mobility series, we look at the lives of three extraordinary individuals, including Ibn Battuta, who shaped our understanding of the world through the lens of mobility. How did Elif, the mobility pavilion at Expo 2020 Dubai, breathe new life into these larger-than-life historical figures? I'm Noon Saleh, and this is Inside Expo, an official podcast of Expo 2020 Dubai, where history is being made.
Our challenge to ourselves is, how do we go beyond what people believe what mobility is?
Here's Marjan Fariduni, Expo's Chief Experience Officer, to remind us of Expo's vision for Elif, the mobility pavilion.
And so we really wanted to focus also on the cultural aspects and the intellectual aspects. And there's this whole notion of past, present, and future, which we wanted to touch on. So the structure from the outside represented a lot of the physical components of mobility. But when we went inside, we wanted to challenge ourselves on how we could stretch people's imagination on what mobility was.
The definition of mobility here goes beyond the physical sense. It includes social mobility, intellectual mobility, the mobility of humans towards new horizons and beyond. To meet this definition, the Expo team collaborated with Barker Langham, an international cultural heritage consultancy. Rizwan, who we heard from earlier, led a team researching many historical figures from the Arab Islamic tradition. And from that wealth of research, the Expo team chose three individuals to tell this exciting story of mobility: Al-Bakri, Ibn Battuta, and Ibn Majid. Three individuals who, according to Rizwan, are not as represented and celebrated as their European counterparts, like Galileo or Da Vinci. We asked Rizwan to give us a brief overview of each one, starting in the 11th century with our earliest explorer, Al-Bakri.
Al-Bakri was one of the greatest geographers of Muslim Spain. Muslim Spain at the time was known as Al-Andalus. And Al-Bakri was born at a time when this intellectual tradition in Al-Andalus was just at its peak. He was enthralled and really intrigued by all this access to knowledge that he had at his fingertips. But what he also was interested in the wider world around him. One of the interesting things about Al-Bakri is that despite him being a geographer, he didn't move. He actually stayed in Muslim Spain for the majority of his life, but was able to write extensively about the world around him. And some of the most important contributions to geography from this period come from Al-Bakri.
He wrote extensively about philology, or the study of the history of language. He also wrote about Arabic tribes and botany, One of his most notable works is The Book of Roads and Kingdoms.
It's almost a catalogue of different kingdoms and civilizations around the world in the 11th century and the 12th century when al-Bakri was born.
This catalogue included writings about the glorious Ghana Empire, Morocco's Almoravid dynasty, and the trans-Saharan trade.
So in a sense, al-Bakri represents mobility at a crossroads of knowledge, because he wasn't a person who actually physically traveled to different locations, but he was at a junction or a nexus of civilizations, and traders, writers, contributors to different aspects of knowledge were all passing through this landscape, and he was there at the conduit of it, or the source of it.
Whereas al-Bakri mostly listened and didn't travel extensively, our next explorer, Ibn Battuta, was the exact opposite.
He actually was born very close to al-Bakri, but is separated, of course, by about 200 years. But he was born in North Africa.
Morocco, to be specific. And he went on to travel incredible lengths to visit all corners of the world.
It was a magical experience. He was traveling through deserts, through mountains, through landscapes that he had never dreamed of. But not only the actual physical landscapes was something that captivated him, it was equally the diversity of the people that were traveling on this journey. So, of course, in North Africa, you have Berber populations, you have Arab populations, you have sub-Saharan African populations and tribes that were also traveling on this journey and using the same route.
He traveled all around the Middle East into India. He made it out to China and Indonesia and wrote about the Maldives too. And when Ibn Battuta returned home after his 28-year journey, he dictated an account of it to the Andalusian writer Ibn Juzay. Today, this book, The Rihla, or The Journey, is considered the most important life summary from the 14th century.
It's commonly known as the Rihla, but actually Rihla is more a kind of theme or genre type of book, but the actual name of the book was A Gift to Those Who Contemplate the Wonders of Cities and the Marvels of Travelling, which is quite a long and quite, perhaps boring title, but it's in, the content of which was incredible and remarkable at the time.
Our third and final explorer is the most contemporary, Ahmed ibn Majid, born in 1432 in today's Ras al Khaimah in the UAE.
His nickname was the Lion of the Seas, and I think this is an absolutely fitting nickname because he was his contribution both intellectually and physically in terms of navigating the oceans was immense.
For context, Ibn Majid came from a family of seafarers. His writings included both prose and poetry describing seas and maritime routes along the African continent and India. But he also pioneered different instruments.
One being known as the Kamal, this system of being able to determine how far away you are from a particular point just by looking at the stars. So Ibn Majid was the third of the three candidates that really was someone who was going above and beyond to push the boundaries of our understanding of the seas. And he does this both himself and traveling, but also in terms of producing this phenomenal bank of 40 treaties that he brought together so that this preservation of knowledge could continue for generations to come.
Now, it's one thing to research the contributions and writings of these three historical figures, but it's another endeavor altogether to try to figure out what they looked like from their facial features to their clothing. All in all, this process took 2 years and required a team of specialists from different fields like history, literature, and archaeology. They even had experts on historical clothing in the Gulf region. No matter what they looked like, what they wore, or where and when they were born, these three giants all share one thing.
When we're thinking about the concept of mobility, it's important to spotlight such individuals and think about how many centuries of observation and thought and collective ingenuity it took to arrive at the knowledge that we have today. I think through spotlighting these individuals and going back to this concept of pushing the boundaries of going beyond the horizon, and we've done that in the sense of space exploration, humans landing on the moon, and Mars rover mission, and going even beyond Mars into planets in a distant galaxy, all of that stems back to this point and these individuals.
And so, with all this research in their hands, the Expo team moved on to their next challenge, translating it into something that would meet their definition of mobility while still touching the hearts of visitors.
It took a lot of us thinking out of the box, but it also took a lot of risk-taking and a lot of courage, because we didn't want to just be another pavilion with screens giving you information. We wanted to impact you. We wanted to put you in awe. And let's not forget, when we were tasked with doing this pavilion, we had to keep in mind that we're getting visitors of all ages, of all backgrounds, of all nationalities. So it had to be universal.
The expo team looked all around the world for talent that could achieve that universality, from architects to experience creators. One of those talents happened to be a bit of a well-known New Zealander.
By total coincidence, I have the... This is the very first model kit I ever made.
This is Sir Richard Taylor. He just goes by Richard.
Sitting next to me is a gremlin. Sitting behind me is Frankenstein, of course, because my alter ego. And then all across the room, you can see there's over 150 models that I've made around me. So even at the age of 57, I'm still collecting these models and manufacturing and gluing them together when I get a moment.
But Richard is more than just an avid collector of action figures.
New Zealand, I run a company with my wife, Tanya, in Wellington, New Zealand, called Weta Workshop. And we're a design and manufacturing facility servicing the world's creative industries. We're best known for our work on feature films like The Lord of the Rings and Hobbit trilogies, the Avatar movies, King Kong, District 9, Wandering Earth, etc.
Yep, you heard that right. Weta Workshop is the team behind the cities, creatures, monsters, dragons, weapons, robots, and vehicles in some of your favorite films. But they also work on location-based immersive experiences, including the one in, you guessed it, Elif, the Mobility Pavilion. Weta's journey with the Expo began in 2018 when the Expo team, led by Her Excellency Rima Al-Hashimi, visited the workshop in Wellington. To show the Expo team an example of what is immersive experiences, Richard took them to the Museum of New Zealand, Te Papa. There, Weta had created an immersive exhibition called Gallipoli, The Scale of Our War. It tells the story of the Gallipoli campaign in World War I through the eyes of eight ordinary New Zealanders who found themselves in extraordinary circumstances.
And it was a small exhibition, but we were so moved by it because we saw larger-than-life individuals. So they could have easily told the story by saying, this is a character and this was his storyline. But they took us through a journey where they exaggerated the people and they made us relate to them in a way that we didn't experience ever in our life. There was also a mixture of sound, scent, music. And so with that, we knew that we wanted to create something that was very visual and that would hit visitors. And that was the seed of coming up with the idea of let us exaggerate key people that have played a role in human progress. Let's bring to life the journey and the milestones of human progress like people have never seen before.
And so the idea was born to make larger-than-life sculptures of key characters in the mobility story that Expo wanted to tell.
It was imperative that we brought a human story to the idea of mobility. It's a very intangible concept, mobility. Tell the story of mobility. But that narrative, if you can't get it right, it's trying to make a movie without a completed script. It's an imperative that lays a foundation. But we got there, and that informed what we needed to build.
Several story treatments were written over the course of 6 months. The result is what you experienced in the first episode of this mobility series as you toured the pavilion. The mare and foal that stand outside Elif, Shamsa, the Bedouin girl you meet when you first enter, the Emirati astronaut, All of these story elements were turned into visual spectacles made by Weta Workshop. Actually, they weren't just made. They were brought to life in a hyper-realistic way, with tons and tons of research to back every choice. To demo that commitment to both narrative and historical research, Richard showed us his personal favorite sculpture, the one of 9th century Arab thinker El-Kindi, as he sits in the House of Wisdom in Baghdad. Richard actually has a replica of it at the workshop.
You can see there even the hairs on the face have been implanted into the nose, and, you know, the glossiness and the mucus along the bottom rim of the eye, etc. The tapered eyelashes, the cut of the beard, the level of sunburn one would endure on the face in that region, and therefore how their faces would be impacted. The pageantry of the clothing, the graphics, the textures of the fabric became imperative. You can't just scale up the faces and hands and make big clothes. You actually have to get fabric woven with the right pilling, the right scale of thread count to replicate 8 times life-size large fabrics. Really, really tricky stuff.
But the pièce de résistance of Weta's creations for Elif is 3 giant sculptures of the 3 explorers we met earlier, Al-Bakri, Ibn Battuta, and Ibn Majid.
3 great men that ventured in their own ways to faraway lands, and with their discoveries, transformed the fortunes of the world. First came Al-Bakri, a man whose desire to discover the truth paved a road to adventure.
These 3 explorers were not contemporaries in real life. They were born hundreds of years apart, each in his own context. But in Elif, they come together in the same place at the same time, becoming the so-called giants of mobility. And really, they're giant.
It's hard to comprehend how big they are. If they were to stand up, they would be 18 meters tall.
Now, to fit into the pavilion, the giants had to be designed sitting down, and even then, they're 9 meters tall. For reference, that's more than 4 times the height of Michael Jordan.
These are very, very large objects. The sculptures themselves took many, many months to do, inspired by 3 actors that were used as models for the sculptures. A single eyeball is the size of a beach ball. We only have to cast the piece that is inside the eye, and we in fact 3D printed the eyes. And then just the hair alone, we get the hair manufactured by a company out of Korea, 25,000 individual hairs drilled into a single face to implant the hair. But the most extraordinary thing to think about is the fabric of their clothing. It takes 1.5 kilometers of fabric for each layer of clothing. And a gentleman of this period is wearing a lot of layers of clothing. So we had to dress them with forklifts and cranes to lay on the layers of fabric.
Even Marjan wasn't prepared for how big they would be in person.
I didn't think it would have this impact until I first visited New Zealand, Wellington, to see how the progress was. And they put me in a store area. And I stood there and I was nothing compared to these 9-meter statues. And I was taken aback. And what I saw was just a metal structure, which was beginning to take shape. And then when I saw the progress of the work and the details around it on how real it was, I was like, this is going to really surprise people. And lo and behold, it did when people visited it.
The sculptures are not presented in isolation, however. They're part of a bigger exhibit that tells the story of mobility. Enter the bas-relief, a 58-meter wall that wraps around the 3 giants. It's a surface that has been sculpted to create different figures and objects, producing a 3D appearance which can be viewed from all angles.
It's a historical technique used across the world in various memorials and sculptures. The idea with the bas-relief is it unfolds the story of mobility from the emergence of humankind coming out of the beginnings of time, passing through the first foundational moments of mobility, which is really forming the tribe, working together as the group, looking beyond the boundaries of the fields and lands in which you hunt, putting footwear on for the first time, and then slowly moving through each component of mobility.
This wouldn't be easy, however, for something like mobility, something that, by definition, has constantly been on the move.
The greatest challenge with the bas relief is that one form of mobility never stopped to allow another to start. You don't stop riding horses to get into a car. The different components of mobility interweave like a rope. And so I coined the phrase with our team, the harmonics of mobility. And if you could imagine interweaving rope strands that pass over and under each other to form almost a helix, a DNA coil of mobility. And that's how we started to think about it. And when you see the bas relief, you can see very clearly how one form of mobility builds to point of critical importance and then starts to fade. But before it fades, another form starts, and then another form and another form. And in turn, we ultimately produced about 200 human figures, vehicles, animals in this massive bas relief.
And finally, in between the three giants is a cartographer's table with a map projected on top of it. This is one of the exhibition's very few digital displays.
And the map that unfolds as a projection across the surface of this cartographer's table that sits between our three giants is organically playing across a very textural and landscaped environment on top of the map to lessen that sense that you're just looking at the television, that you're looking at a movie screen.
Just the bodies of the three giants took about 6 to 8 months to finish, not including all the work that went into the immersive aspects of the exhibition. But when the giants were finally assembled, it was an incredible moment for everyone involved.
The day that we lowered the heads on, the hands slipped on, and we started to dress them was a very happy day. Everyone in the company came down for a look and just all stood there in awe of what everyone's created. And in the case of the day I described, myself and a couple of other close colleagues and friends all put on climbing harnesses and clambered up onto the top of the table and just sat literally on the hands of these giant figures while all of our crew circulated around 5-6 meters below us on the ground, all looking up in awe at these figures. And once you are there and you're standing in front of them and you realize that they have captured a presence and they are in the moment in front of you, you start to feel confident that the guests that visit the pavilion in the future will likewise be emotionally stirred by the result of being near or around these giant figures. And that was a very special moment for us.
And Richard's colleague Rick used the beautiful phrase to describe the experience of being around these giants: intimate immensity. And unsurprisingly, the pavilion's visitors are getting that feeling of intimate immensity around Al-Bakri, Ibn Battuta, and Ibn Majid.
A lot of people have thanked the Expo team for making them larger than life, because they have been larger than life. But to put them at that scale, hands down, the giants have been the highlight of this place for all the visitors that have visited. And that's something that people don't forget. My niece, she's 7 years old. When she visited it, she's like, "The giants, I can't forget the giants. They were so big and they were so real. I thought they will talk to me."
As we come to the end of our mobility series, we ask perhaps the most important question of all. Why tell the never-ending story of mobility through this level of immersion?
Why create giants? Why create these huge characters? Well, they're representing the pillars of history that stay with us into the future. And by building them at scale, it causes us to arrest our journey and inspect, to consider, to think for a moment or for a while about the contributions that these people have made to modern society, how they have influenced and inspired cultures across the world, and why it's important as an audience that we stop and ponder the important people that have added to the mobility of the human race.
And if this is mobility, yes, I think this experience defines mobility, because through what we've done, through creating this immersive experience, we've been able to put people in awe. And the final message in that pavilion is that you could draw out what your future could look like, and that you have a role to play in drawing out a future that could matter to humanity.
Inside Expo takes you behind the scenes at Expo 2020 Dubai, sharing our stories and others across the 170-year history of this global event. Learn more by visiting virtualexpodubai.com. Inside Expo is produced by Kerning Cultures Network. We release episodes every Tuesday and Friday. Subscribe to Inside Expo on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss an episode. If you enjoyed the show, share it with your friends and leave us a review.